Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Glad to have you come me for another hour of dementia talk with a little bit of music thrown in. Although I'm struggling to see how we can fit in everything this week's guest has achieved. Gina Award is a dementia consultant and advocate, author working on her second book, radio host, and in 2018 she was awarded a British Empire Medal for voluntary services to people living with dementia in Devon. Gina will be joining me right after this from Cimarron 615. Cimarron 615 and Fallin kicking off this week's edition of The D Word, where my guest is Gina Award. Well, Gina, it's a real pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on The D Word. We have got a lot to talk about, but to start with, I mean, you know, you've been a hotel and catering manager, you've been an estate agent, a qualified counsellor, a reflexologist. Where's the dementia link come from?
So, interestingly, in 2011, I didn't plan on doing a degree in health and social care, but I did. I did picked a module, which was an introduction to health and social care. And that was just like a 9-month module. And I ended up doing 5 more, which lasted 6 years. and it was part-time, I was working at the time, and all the modules that I chose, Pete, were so, I would say, life-changing, life-enhancing, so fascinating. So I did public health, I did adult aging and the life course, I did death and dying, I did dementia care and more. But it was the second module, which was dementia care, that really set me off on this mission with dementia. And I haven't looked back. And that was 13 years ago now. And when I reflect back, and in fact, you mentioned reflexology, my nan, who's not alive anymore, but used to live in Spain, but when she was younger, lived in London, and me and my sister used to go into care homes with her. She used to do creative arts with the residents. And what I didn't know at the time, or what I did feel at the time, as I was 8, my sister was 7, is that I was very aware and intuitively, yeah, connected or whatever, linked in to the fact that there were a lot of people there that were engaging with the creative arts with my nan, but a lot that weren't. And the people that weren't, for me as an 8-year-old looking back, looked lonely, isolated, frightened. Some people were calling out, and it was quite distressing from my perspective. And actually, I'm a really sensitive person, so I obviously felt that empathy. And it was actually when I started doing the dementia work, I didn't think about this. I'm very interested in the human mind. I've got a counselling background. I love connecting with people. I'm curious about how the mind works. And I thought that was enough for me to be driven, you know, towards my dementia mission, if you like. But then people kept on asking me more. There must be more to it, which I thought that was quite a lot anyway. And that's when I started reflecting about my childhood, being an 8-year-old, you know, 45 years ago or whatever, 47 years ago. And I believe I really felt sort of a connection. I relate to feeling vulnerable and misunderstood, not in the way people with dementia do, but in different ways through life experience, etc. And I genuinely believe that that was a catalyst, and it was dormant inside me for all those years. And then when I tapped into that dementia care module in 2012, that changed my life.
Yeah, you see, it's strange, isn't it? Because, you know, I hark back to my first days in hospital radio, which was in a large psychiatric hospital. I went into a room full of people who were sitting around the TV, said to a nurse, I was 19 at the time, I said, well, what's going on here? And this was in the 80s. And she said, oh, they're all geriatrics. And I kind of, I look back on that and think, you know, how far things have come. But rather like you, it took a long time to get this show together, sort of 7 years ago, but it's kind of, it seems that it was something that was meant to happen, and things like that just occur, don't they?
They do. I think serendipity is an amazing thing. And, you know, we never know what our paths are going to take in life, do we? But I think, and that's the most incredible thing about life, isn't it? It's so precious, but it can be challenging, scary, and all of those things mixed up. Yeah, I would never, ever have thought sort of 15 years ago I would have done what I've done in the last 13 years, ever, you know. And if some people had said, oh, you've got a degree, you know, you graduated, I wouldn't believe them because I don't see myself as academic. However, having done the degree, I really believe anyone can do one, because it's down to feeling driven and wanting to do it. Obviously, it takes a lot of dedication, especially if you're doing it with the Open University, because you're very much kind of on your own. Although there's a lot of support, you're not going into lectures, you know, in physical way. And that does make a difference, because that sort of is better for people. But for me, it worked. I used to go to coffee shops and do all my modules. And I even remember pressing my last submit button for my final assignment in 2017, and I got to know all the coffee shop staff there, the baristas, and I said, will you take a picture of me when I press submit, because I was so thrilled. Like you say, things happen, and I just really think my nan, you know, has had a big influence, because as I said, she also trained as a reflexologist, and now I'm in the process of completing my second book.
Well, completing your second book, tell us about the first one.
So my first book came about because I did a lot of work between 2017 and 2023 with the most amazing human, creative genius I've ever met, who is sadly no longer with us, Mr. Tony Husband. He died 2 and a bit years ago now, but I met him at an event he came down to talk about his book, which was called, or is called, Take Care, Son, My Dad Living with Dementia. And he did like he stood at the front of the Phoenix Centre, and there were about, it was a November wintry day, I remember at the time, and there were about probably 50 or 60 of us in the audience. And it was, he basically told the story, and his book about his dad's dementia was fully coloured and illustrated. It was only 60 pages, but it packed a punch. You know, it was a real gem. And he told the story with the visuals, and he was just such a brilliant storyteller. I was so inspired by him. I went and chatted to him afterwards, and we only had about 10 minutes, and we could have chatted for hours. And he just said, if ever you need a cartoon doing, you know, and we exchanged emails anyway. Didn't think anything of it. And then a few months later, I sort of said to him, would he come to Exeter? Because I'd founded the Exeter Dementia Action Alliance at that point. And I said to him, would he come down? And we were going to put on an event, and I'd wondered if he'd retell the story. But we didn't have much money. So I said, we could pay for your train and overnight accommodation. So he said, great, and took it, very generous, and came. And from then on, we just started working together collaboratively from afar. You know, I'm in Exeter, he was in Manchester. And we did a lot. So I'd write blogs and things, and he would illustrate them. And then we did pieces of work and projects together. And then in 2019, well, just before COVID, we started talking about potentially a book. And then during COVID, I remember saying that I felt it was really important for carers to be able to tell their stories, because as we know, it's a whole family thing, isn't it? When someone's diagnosed with dementia, you know that it's not just the person, it's the person and the family and friendship and friend group and everything. And so I said it would be quite good to like try and capture some short stories of people that are willing to tell their stories. If we could connect with people, because we're both quite well connected with different people and charities and things, and try and find some people that would be interested in telling the story. So we approached the book publisher that published Tony's original book. He'd also done another one as well. And the publisher was interested, which was great. So then we set about it. So over about a year or so, 15 months, I sort of connected with different people and charities to see who would be willing to tell their stories. And basically we'd sit across on Zoom, and I'd glean information from family. And then it was a real creative challenge to try and edit a big story down to sort of like a few pages, of which was going to be illustrated in black and white by Tony. Anyway, I edited it down. We did that together. He did some rough illustrations. We then went back to each family one by one. This is just a quick whistle stop tour of how it works, Pete, because it was quite a long, complex process. And then basically said with their amendments and things, and we hoped that they felt that we'd captured the essence and the heart of their story. Which we did, which was great. There were a few amendments, and then brought it alive. So that was published in 2022. So there's seven stories in United. It's called United, Caring for Our Loved Ones Living with Dementia, published by Robertson Group, part of the Little Brown Group in London. As I said, seven family stories. One of them's a composite story, which I made up because I felt that there are elements of things, nuggets of information people could do with being aware about. So I sort of wrote a little bit about young onset dementia and how it is for children to learn and be with their families with dementia. So, but the other six were all true stories. We had to anonymise them to protect privacy in case there was any wider family that were lurking we didn't know about and they didn't know about. So it could have caused some controversy. And it's been really well received. So, you know, it was chosen as one of 20 books by the Reading Well Initiative in 2024. So they did a consultation for people with dementia involved in it, families, academics, charities, to pick 20 books that would then be available in every library in England or Wales. And ours was one. So, yeah.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at a special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a great story. And so you've written that one. It's been well received. It's, you know, will be in my local library, hopefully. I'll go and have a look next time I go.
Yeah, it should be, definitely.
What's happening with the second book then?
Right, so basically, the first book, I never rest on my laurels, Pete, and Tony would be like, oh my God, just wait for this to settle. And I'm like, let's do another one. I really realised that I like writing. Anyway, we sort of were thinking about it, and we talked to the publisher about maybe another book on the horizon, and then sort of left United to settle and land. And then in 2022, so United was out in 2022, but of course the manuscript had been done late, you know, a lot earlier, so there's always a big gap between that and the publishing. So I think it was 2022 we talked about it and I had some ideas, and then in 2023 we talked a bit more about it. Then Tony died. So obviously I've never worked with an illustrator before like I did with Tony. We had a really good sort of working relationship, a creative way of, it just worked between us. So, you know, I really wanted to do another one, but I just didn't think it would happen. I did have a chat with the publisher, especially particularly when we were selected, United was selected as one of the Reading Well Initiative books, and that was in 2024. And he said, I said, it would need to be illustrated if I did another one, but it's not just finding an illustrator. You've got to think, well, could you work together, etc. So I kind of let it, didn't think anything of it. And also one of the things for me that was important is not just finding an illustrator, it's not being driven by money, because this isn't a money-making thing. This is something from the heart of us wanting to make a difference. And also if that person, preferably in a therapeutic way, has an understanding of dementia. Anyway, really long story short, my friend Joe, who's wonderful and has authored three children's books, introduced me to her illustrator, who I was a bit of a dubious meeting, not because of him, but because I was thinking, oh, I don't know, I'm a bit anxious about it, and I don't want to feel pressured. I don't know if this, you know, and don't like letting people down and things. Anyway, I met him, Mark Hannon, brilliant. He was like me, you know, he was just, his father-in-law actually has dementia, and he was very, very keen to get involved. So we've been working on that for the last year or so, about a year and a half now, since August 2024, it's seven stories. I've written all the stories. I've got to go back and review one. I've just written the introduction, but then it's going to be different, this one, because it's going to be about my personal experience, because I advocate with families. So again, they'll be anonymized. Some of them will be true stories and some of them will be composite stories based on information that I think is really important as an educational resource and for people to learn and understand more about, like the rare dementias, although that features in some of my real true stories, and dying and planning ahead and the importance of really thinking about if we didn't have capacity, any of us, and that could be any reason, not just dementia, it could be a brain injury, it could be anything, What would we want? Would our family know what we want? Obviously, if they didn't, they'd be making decisions based on the person's best interests. And I think it's really important for all of us, whatever age we are, to really think about what's important to us. And that might be simple things. Like if I was in a care home, I would want a blanket because that's what I would want. Some people might say, I don't want to go into a care home, but that there might be no option, you know. And it can be, do you want a religious funeral service? Do you want a celebrant? Talking about celebrants, I've just trained as a celebrant, a live celebrant. So that's what the book's going to be about. And it's going to be called, or it is called, When Time Aligns, Stories of Care with a Dementia Companion. And Sienna is the narrator. So she's partly got my voice and then she's got her own voice as well. So it will be about her professional journey, but it'll also be interweaved in between the stories with short reflections about what she's learning about her life, because the story opens with her splitting up with her partner because basically Sienna's a bit of a workaholic. I'm not saying I'm a workaholic, but I am somebody that struggles to switch off and I need to learn boundaries and self-compassion. So there's elements of me in that. And she's going to have a therapy dog called Willow. And it's going to be dedicated to no other than Mr. Tony Husband.
Excellent stuff. Well, we very much look forward to that. And I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because when you start along this road and start looking at dementia, you probably start looking for a textbook or something like that. And you soon find that if you actually can get that information across in terms of a story, something people want to read, it is far more powerful than just having some kind of list of facts together.
Absolutely. And I think you can't, you're so true, Pete. And I think that's one of the things that came across. And that's partly why United was selected as part of the Reading Well initiative, because from people living with dementia's perspective and carers, and I've spoken to a lot and a lot of them have read it, they've said what's great about it is it's diverse. It's got humour. It's got compassion and emotion, but it's accessible. It's easily readable. It takes an hour to read. You could read one story and really take in the imagery in 10 to 15 minutes. I'm not sort of minimizing it by saying it's a quick read, because you can look at it in different ways, but it's something that someone could pick up. And if they, and I know a lot of people in this world and the industry world with dementia as well, that they don't want to read. Sometimes they don't want to read. I'm not saying if they've got dementia, but it might be a carer. Oh, I haven't got time to read. But when they know the books are short, it's short read, but you know, we call it the little big book, because it does offer a lot of learning and nuggets and gems of learning. So I'm so proud of United, and I'm going to be so proud of my next one when it's published. And big thanks and shout out to Joe for recommending Mark, and Mark for doing the fabulous illustrations.
That boy she's in love with, and that pretty house they share up on that hill. Looks like she got the life I always wanted and always will. Well, I like the way she laughs when she's laughing, and I love the way she walks into a room. Shoulders back like she ain't scared of nothing, down to her boots. But she just stopped me in my tracks, 'cause I've never seen her look like that. She looked me right straight in the eyes, said, I don't know why you're surprised. The truth to me could not be clearer. You've always been the girl in the mirror. She said, I knew one day we'd wind up here together. You just had some catching up to do. Whether life gets bad or it gets better, now you see what you can make it through. Now she just stopped me in my tracks, 'cause I've never seen myself like. to you, girl. Yeah, I'm looking at that girl in the mirror.
Tricia Yearwood and The Mirror here on UK Health Radio, where all our shows are available for listen again and download from the website at ukhealthradio.com. This week I'm chatting to my guest, Gina Awad. You've also done probably still doing a little bit of what I'm doing, of course, the old radio host thing on Phonic FM. I mean, that to me is brilliant because national radio shies away from certain subjects, dementia being one of them. Would be lovely if we could have a weekly phone in on a national station, but I don't seem to be very interested. But you're doing your bit down there on Phonic FM.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I was thinking the other day, because I'm not the techie person behind it at all, Pete. I'm very much the one, I can get the guests. I've never, ever had a shortage of guests. It's been brilliant. I've been doing it 10 years now. It's only when there's a fifth Saturday in the month. So there's only about three or four a year. But in a way, that can be a bit, it's challenging in some ways because it's big gaps in between. But it also is manageable for me. I wouldn't be able to do it weekly or monthly even because, you know, it's voluntary. So it's finding the guests, having a chat with them and then sort of either bringing them into the studio or doing it on the phone like we are. And, you know, I love it. I've interviewed some brilliant guests and I continue to. So when there's a fifth Saturday in the month, I'll be live on air on a Saturday from 2 till 4, talking to my lovely people. It's called Living Better with Dementia, and I've had some brilliant guests, people with dementia, family carers, charities, care home managers, just so many different people. And for me, probably like you, you really just want to share people's stories and information. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when we started this, well, nearly 7 years ago now, I've got to say, I thought it'd probably last about 3 or 4 months and then I'd have to find something else. We're over 300 episodes. I talk to people all over the world and they still keep coming. It's unbelievable.
Brilliant. How many do you do, Pete? How regularly do you do yours?
Weekly. Yeah, we go out every week.
Is it weekly?
52
wow.
A year.
Brilliant.
So absolutely. So I don't, you know, as you say, there are so many people out there. I mean, just a matter of interest. I mean, when you approached Phonic FM with the idea, what did somebody say when you said, "Hey, I want to do a show on dementia"?
I didn't approach them. I'll tell you what happened. When I started setting out on my dementia sort of mission, vision or whatever in 2014, I just wrote to Phonic FM as a local community radio show. And I just said, "Hi, this is what I'm doing in Exeter. I want to raise more awareness of dementia. Is it possible to come onto your show?" I know that the whole radio station is very much, you know, it's all volunteers. Some of them just play music, not just, but play music. Some have chats and that. And there was one lady called Anna who basically approached me. So what they did is when I wrote to them, it goes out to all the hosts and then they can just write to me. So I got a message from Anna and she said, "Come in and chat to me." So we did. I think we had a couple of chats and she said to me, "Oh, you should do your own show. It'd be great." And I said, "Oh God, no, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do all this tech. I love talking, love people, but oh no, I'd be too scared." Anyway, long story short, didn't think anything of it. And then I said, "Oh, I couldn't commit to it voluntarily, you know, on a regular basis." And she said she did hers once a fortnight. And then something came up and I think it was her that mentioned me or somebody else at the time. It might have been Pat, who produces my show. So he does all the tech stuff, said that there was a slot for when there's the fifth Saturday in the month. Would I be interested? So I thought, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing, but why not? And never look back. And that
Excellent.
Was 10 years ago, Pete. What I can't believe it.
Time flies, as I can attest, when you get yourself involved in radio. I mean, the Dementia Action Alliance in Exeter that you start, there are numerous Dementia Action Alliances around the country. I've got to say some are a lot better at spreading messages than others. How have you found that whole experience?
So basically, we actually closed at the end of the year because I set it up in 2014 and it's been amazing. We had a great board. We weren't a full-blown charity. We were basically sort of more than a community group. So we did fundraising, we did projects, I delivered information sessions. I did hundreds and reached thousands of people across the city over the sort of 11 years we were running. But what I was finding is there's all the governance side of things like that. And we had a great board, but they're all working full time. And I was finding that I was getting more involved in the dry stuff. I don't like the dry stuff, all the admin. I know we need all that, but I was struggling with that. And then chasing invoices and all. And it's just not my thing. So we had a really good discussion last summer about the fact that we could either find someone else to replace me and keep it going, or we could naturally bring it to a close. And actually, we decided to bring it to a close because really there wasn't anyone in the board that could replace me. And it was kind of mine, as in I'd set it up and it was mine, as in I shaped it the way it was. So if anyone took it over, they'd need to start from scratch. So it was a really hard decision. It was really emotive, but it was the right decision for me because it's not taking my focus away from dementia, but it means that I can focus on more of the elements that I want to. But it was tough, really tough, Pete, because in the early days, trying to get people on board, as in organisations and the local council and everything else, it was really tough because we just kind of weren't taken seriously. And this was obviously back sort of 2013, and it has changed a lot now. But at the time, in 2013, there was nothing, I think, in the whole of the Southwest, which includes Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly, I think there was an alliance in Tavistock, Plymouth and Crediton and Falmouth, and that was it. Now there's hundreds. They're all over the place. Some have kept going, some haven't. Some are voluntary-led, some are council-led, some are under the umbrellas of charities, and they all work differently. But we certainly made a mark in the city, and we were the Lord Mayor's Charity of the Year between 22 and 2023, which is an amazing accolade, and it was an honour to be involved in that in the community. So to be selected as a foundation, as we were, was incredible. But it what a great legacy. And do you know what I did, Pete? As I went along, I kept scrapbooks of all the things that I did, because although a lot of it is on the internet, I thought, well, I haven't got much to leave when I die, so I can be buried with either all my stuff that I've got, my scrapbooks, or my son can take it on, which I'm hoping will be the latter. But so I've got like a real good array. I've got about 8 scrapbooks of all the bits and pieces of work that we did over the 11 years. So it's amazing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I don't do too much talking these days. These days. These days I seem to think a lot about the things that I forgot to do. And all the time I had the chance to. Risk another these days, these days. These days I seem to be afraid to live the life that I have made in song. Well, it's just that I've been losing for so long. Sit on cornerstones and count the time in quarter tones to ten. Please don't confront me with my failures. I've not forgotten them.
The Brother Brothers and their version of Jackson Browne's These Days. Always good to hear from you on the show. Our email is tdwradio@gmail.com, and you can find us on all the social media platforms, except TikTok, of course. You don't want to see me dance. Back to Gina. I get, you know, difficulty with dementia world, as with everything else, is you have to keep your foot on the pedal and have to keep it going. And sometimes that's difficult. And I guess sometimes it's difficult as well. I sometimes feel that in terms of dementia, we're kind of feeding from the bottom up towards those at the top with the policies who get it all to do, where really it should be the other way around.
It should be the other way around. And in an ideal world, Pete, we absolutely want it to become from top down, but it's not. Yes, there's a lot of work going on. I know there is, there really is, but not enough. And it's not happening quick enough. Dementia is huge. We know it's the biggest health and social care challenge of the century. It's not going away. There is no cure. We hope there will be in our lifetime. Whether there will, we don't know. But in the meantime, we need to think about what impact we can make socially and emotionally for families and people living with it day to day, because that is paramount.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important message because, you know, we all see their headlines. There are loads and loads of trials going on at the moment. There have been drugs that have come out in the last year or so. But I always feel you've got to hit that mix because the media will leap on all those trials because hope sells papers and gets people to look at websites. Mm. Whereas all those people that are actually dealing with it now are the ones that need attention. And sometimes I think that mix goes far too far towards the trying to search for a cure end of the market.
Yeah, I mean, there's some brilliant, you know, researchers, you know, there's some great research going on. Alzheimer's Research, you know, UK are brilliant. There's loads and loads of stuff. And there's great stuff that when people are diagnosed, they can tap into that and be part of those research programs, which is fantastic. But we need more on the ground support. I mean, I get messages a lot, and going forward, I will be doing more advocating with families to work directly with them because there isn't enough local resource and support. There are ABL nurses around and they are amazing across the country, but we don't have one even in Exeter. And we're a big city, you know, we're not big as other cities, but, you know, we've got seaside towns around us like Exmouth and Honiton. They have ABL nurses, we don't. So then people call me and say, my mum's been diagnosed, my dad's been diagnosed, I need help. We don't know what to do. We've got all these leaflets, help us. And it shouldn't be like that, Pete.
No, you know, there should be some form of coordination when someone gets a diagnosis, then there should be a clear pathway. And people will probably get sick of me saying it here on the show, but I had a cancer diagnosis 3 years ago and I had a very clear pathway of where I was going. Friends who have dementia diagnoses, well, it's a postcode lottery.
It is very much so. And actually, you know, in Exeter, everyone's doing their best or whatever. And there, it's better than it was. We've got to say, and with a capital B, it is a lot better than it was. But it's just far away from where it needs to be. And as you say, that's what really inspired me. Because the early days of me sharing information sessions, which was basically a set of resources that the Alzheimer's Society, you know, created, that I was sharing. So it's quite prescriptive. We had to keep on in focus. But I was getting the same pattern and themes and feedback from people when I delivered, after I delivered about 20, saying, we're really frightened. Why have we got this information from you? Why haven't we got this from my GP? Da 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 da. And, you know, that's when I set out my mission to realise in Exeter there's a lot going on around dementia, but it's not easily connected. And we're still a lot in that place where there are a lot of resources, but it's not a clear pathway. And as you say, you have that. You had that for your cancer diagnosis. And I've got a friend of mine that's just been diagnosed as well. And she said the NHS have been amazing. It's just been bang, bang, bang. It's literally been slick. You know, it's months sometimes to wait for a memory clinic appointment. And I know that's down to resources, but that's scary, that waiting period, that not knowing, that wondering, what if, what can I do? And it's not until you get that diagnosis that you can really get the support that you need. And that's also very sad.
Yeah, very sad. And I think it's sometimes also with, you know, the way the media concentrates on things, people are scared from getting a diagnosis because the picture of, well, a diagnosis is not the end of the road is not given at all.
And we know that from Wendy Mitchell, who sadly died, it must be almost 2 years ago now. And that is just unbelievable how quick it's gone. The same with Tony. But, you know, as you know, a diagnosis is not the end, as she would say. It's a beginning and a middle and a whole lot of living to live through. And she did some amazing advocacy work and campaigning through those years that she was living with dementia from the age of 58 to her 60s. You know, she was just incredible. And there are so many people out there. I love a lovely lady I spoke to yesterday called Karen Young. Her husband's diagnosed with Lewy body. She's had a really, really difficult journey. And we've talked about these words and terminology and how people get stressed out with certain words we use. But it has been a journey. And she'd be the first person to say that to get that diagnosis. It was horrendous. It took absolutely ages. And then she felt not listened to. But because she is quite a forthright person, a bit like me, when it comes to dementia, we're like a dog with a bone. We won't put it down. My dog certainly doesn't, and I'm sure your Benny won't either, Pete. But, you know, it's because of being like that, we've got to where we are to some degree. But some people aren't like that. They're not. They haven't got that sort of wherewithal to basically challenge hierarchy and authorities and systems. And I think that is really, really hard.
I think, you know, we've had many chats on the show actually about the fact that we are brought up to kind of revere medical professionals almost. What they say is, you know, is the law almost. And I remember last time I went to my GPs, I had a couple of students there. And I said, would you mind having the word with the students? And before the doctor came in, I was just having a chat, told them what I did. And I said, you know, what do you guys know, you know, in terms of dementia, how much training do you get? And it was about half a day. It was absolutely nothing. And that kind of scared me a bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting you say that, because actually I did a piece of work over about 3 or 4 years, and I actually worked with a doctor. We did a special study unit, which was part of the degree at Exeter University, and they were training to either be GPs or consultants or whatever. We didn't know what way they were going to actually go down, but we did a piece on dementia, and they have a they said that they, you know, they have a reasonable amount of knowledge, but still not enough. And obviously, as we know, GPs, they are general practitioners. They only know what they know, and they only specialise and understand more about this particular diagnosis if that's what they explore. But yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of dementia sessions in GP practices as well over the years. And when I've done them, I've been quite stunned at how little the nurses and the staff know. Obviously, that's changed and it's better than it was, but there's still a lot of people that you think would know certain basic stuff don't.
Yeah,
I think, you know, there are, as we know, there's a lot of dementias and there's rare dementias, and people just think, well, it's about memory loss and it's only if you're old. You know, children can get it. There's a lot of stuff going on in Australia around childhood dementia, which I think is fascinating and absolutely right. But it is frightening that, and I know they're bringing it in on the media, you know, you've got different soaps doing it and it's great or whatever, but yeah, there needs to be more training in the, you know, frontline services.
Most definitely. And I think the problem, time sadly is bringing us to grows, but I think part of the problem is obviously GPs are referrers. And if it is so patchwork with how people can get referred and where they get referred to, you know, it's a really difficult job for them.
It is. But also, I think what I find interesting, I was talking yesterday to Karen, who I was saying early on about with her husband, Alan, with Louis Body. And I was saying that, you know, I'm keen to go back to all the GP surgeries in Exeter now and deliver a dementia session the way I do it, adding the resources or including the resources that I've gleaned over the last 13 years. And so that they have an understanding of, because I could give them a lot of good, I'm not saying loads, but a sort of, say 10 to 12 good, decent resources across the country that would help their people, their patients. I don't like the word patients, but the people that are coming in. So if someone's got a diagnosis, they can be linked and signposted to some other resources. But I genuinely feel that if I went into most of the GP surgeries in Exeter, and this is no disrespect to them, probably most of them as a surgery would not know about maybe more than one or two of them. Yeah. And these are nuggets. These are gold. These are gems of resources.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jane, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I can tell, normally when I'm talking to guests, my eyes go a little bit left-hand side because I've got a whole list of things. Oh, must ask that, must ask that. There's a lot left on that list, so we'll have to get you back on the show to talk about a few of those. But for now, anyway, it's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. It hasn't been. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show. And maybe when my next book's out in the autumn or winter or whatever, I can come on and we can talk about those other things that you'd like to ask me about. I'd love to. Thank you so much, Pete. It's been amazing.
Absolutely. I'll put it in the diary. Thanks to Gina, great to catch up with her, and we'll certainly get her back on the show later in the year. In the meantime, of course, look out for the new book, and while you're waiting, get a copy of the first one, United Caring for Our Loved Ones, Living with Dementia, with illustrations from the brilliant Tony Husband. That's it for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, we're going to be doing some gymnastics with my guest, Love to Move instructor, Trudy Carruthers. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.